I was getting a little bite to eat with a couple homies the other day, and I don't know how we got on this, but I'd never heard this as an explanation, and just, like, everything made sense to me. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard people, like, scientifically explain déjà vu?
I don't think so. I've heard, like, alternate universe theory stuff, but I don't feel like it was really grounded in science.
Would you just give me a brief alternate universe? Because it's really going to polarize what I'm going to tell you.
Great. And I don't really, like, totally remember. So this is going to be loose and off the cuff. So I think déjà vu was explained to me once as, like, if you can, like, slip into a time loop, or, like, maybe you experience something in an alternate reality once, okay, and you're experiencing it again now here, mm-hmm, or, like, I don't know, maybe I just had, like, Matrix explanations, like little glitches in the fabric of the universe, if you will.
Like, if you're living in, like, a continuous loop?
Yes, yes, continuous loop things. Because
people, I think that's how we got on this. We were talking about when people believe, like, if we're, like, living within, like an algorithm, or, like, it, like, just, like, a
hologram universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was, like, the dumbest, most obvious, like, I was like, that's 100% what déjà vu is.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm, like, sold. Okay, so déjà vu, some folks argue, is caused by a dual neurological processing with, like, delayed signals. Oh. So it's, like, so dumb. It's, mm-hmm, like, obvious to me. I mean, do with this what you will, hologram universe people. But, okay, so your brain sorts incoming signals, and that's all done in the temporal lobe, mm-hmm, right? But the signals enter the temporal lobe twice before they're processed, once from each hemisphere of your brain.
Mm.
And sometimes there could be, like, a really slight delay, like milliseconds,
yeah,
between each hemisphere hitting your temporal lobe.
Right.
And so when the second one hits your temporal lobe, it seems like you're reliving the first one.
Right.
Like, it seems like you already heard it.
Oh,
or
my
knew it.
God. This feels exactly right.
Doesn't that feel
it even
exactly
kind of feels
right?
Like that. Yeah, right. It's like I'm prompted for something and then instantly remember it. And then I'm like, oh, this is very familiar from 0.8 seconds ago.
Right. And, or just like you're like, why does this feel like just like a little bit some way? And then you're like, oh, because it just like it literally just like milliseconds before,
right,
your brain just like didn't get all the info at the exact same time.
This is unbelievable.
Isn't that just like a dumb amount of clarity?
I can't wait to burst a lot of people's bubble. I know I'll get pushback, but I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, you will get pushback. But to me, when I heard that, I was like, well, this is straight up.
I feel very debunked about this now.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I don't know if déjà vu was something I ever really bought into as like an explanation of things. Like,
I get
I'm
it
more
a lot,
like,
though.
I'm more like freaked out about coincidences that are like not within my own life totally. Like, I was on this trip recently and I was reading a book, and then I kept like being near things or like doing the same thing as the dude in the book, but in an unplanned way. And like that made me feel trippy. But,
yes.
Like,
God. But I like, have, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Because that was outside of my control. Like, I couldn't have written the book. You know what I mean?
Think.
It wasn't happening inside of me.
Yeah. But maybe you're like prompted to make like tiny subconscious choices that were prompted by the book and then led you to like situationally be doing what the character was doing.
No, there was weird shit. Like, there was this one spot where like the guy was traveling and I was traveling, so you could do something with that. Mm-hmm. But there was stuff that like I would like, I got in like to take a long bath and then like started this new chapter, and in the chapter he starts taking a long bath and I was like, well,
interesting.
And then there was another one where he like goes to Mexico and it's like, this is taking place, I think, in the 90s, and he's never had mezcal before.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's, like, trying it, and he's describing what he thinks it tastes like, which made me laugh. I think he described it as, like, cigarettes that were put out inside tequila, which, like,
it's
made me LOL.
It's not fully wrong. Yeah, I got a lot of
mezcal
leaving my body,
like,
at this moment. But
Well, you're feeling a hangover, so whatever I say about it's going to make you feel some kind of way.
It's fine.
But I started to be like, wow, like, why do I feel like I can smell mezcal? And I was at a wine bar eating a sandwich and having a glass of, like, Sauvignon Blanc. Mm-hmm. And then I looked over, and this is a wine bar. So it's, like, not a heavy spirit situation.
Right.
But there are two reps talking to, like, somebody behind the bar, and they're, like, doing a tasting of mezcal. And I was like, that's weird.
That is weird.
And so I was, like, smelling it as he was talking about it in the book. And he talks about it once in the book for, like, half a page.
That is bizarre, actually.
And so, like, that kind of shit is, that shit freaks me out, but I'm like totally debunked on Deja Vu now.
Totally debunked on Deja Vu for sure. Yeah, jury's out on coincidence. Maybe we'll be able to explain that later.
Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
And then I get like a little misty and I'm like, should I be caring more about animals than like people?
But it doesn't have to. He licks all the beakers and flasks and tubes until he finds it.
No. Are you making this up?
I'm not. This is how it was discovered. Hands-on in-the-field experience to hydrate youths.
Which I know you're like, great, Austin, so you're drinking that fake water again. This month in December, please stop douching your genitals.
Soul searching to find their true self.
I mean, that is this podcast, so... It's something we can all enjoy together. Welcome to Why Are You Like This, the home of debunking Deja Vu, but like perhaps not the coincidences of the world.
Most definitely not.
Yeah, I don't know. We could go. That's a whole nother episode, but I could really talk and be like, is anything a coincidence? I don't know. Is it just like subjective memory? Like you only remember the things that are like confirmation bias? Truly another episode. Mm-hmm. But aside from debunking or affirming coincidences, if you will, this is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, pop culture, whatever we're noodling on at the moment in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is Jamie Ryan nursing a smooth mezcal-induced hangover in Cincinnati.
And that is Austin Williams ruining all of your multi-universe dreams in Chicago.
That's me, here to ruin your multi-universe dreams. I don't know.
Fun
I'm not
sucker.
Against multi-universe dreams. I'm just saying I don't think we can, you know, use deja vu as an explanation for them anymore when it could be just so easily scientifically explained. Although, like, there's no way to prove that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it totally makes sense. Like a stereo effect on your brain.
Right. It just, like, to me, I was like, this is so dumb. And oftentimes I think in scientific things, like, the dumbest answer is usually the right one.
Absolutely. I can't remember what that's called, but there's a name for, like, the most obvious
thing. There is
a
name for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they're, like, you know, the most obvious solution, like, is the solution or the most obvious choice or whatever. There is, like, a true name for that. But, I mean, it's like, I think one time somebody asked Stephen Hawking, like, brilliant mind, and they were like, do you think that humans will ever be able to time travel?
Oh my God, like, I love this.
And he just goes, no. And people were like, how can you be sure? And he goes, because if we were, we would be, like, already overrun with a bunch of tourists from the future. And I was like, you're right, Stephen Hawking. If people could time
travel,
they're disguised. We would already know.
But maybe they're invisible. Invisible time travelers all around us, tourists from the future.
I mean, well, I feel like literary giants have been doing this forever when people, like, insert time travel into their novels.
Fair.
Because then they, like, create this thing that they're like, well, you can't, it's bad.
Gotta blend in.
So you can't see, like, be seen. And it's, like, a whole storyline of, like, you can't really fuck shit up because, like, things you could do could have huge impact, which is true. But, like, I just don't believe that people would be responsible.
No, you can't open that to tourism unless you have some kind of, like, little bubble for them to be in that prevents them from fucking with anything. I don't know.
Although, if anyone from the future is listening to this and has some ideas on how to prevent, you know, forest fires and global warming and all the things, listen, show yourself now, okay?
Yeah, you can get at us on Instagram at Why You Like This Pod if you're a traveler from the future.
Specifically. But, dude, what would I do if someone came to me and was like, hey, I know the future, like, I'm from the future. Like, how would I, Austin Williams, handle that information? Like, somehow somebody was going to believe me about it, and I was going to help facilitate this?
I would think it was a meth head. Fully.
I mean, truly. I probably wouldn't even listen. Yeah. Yeah, I think I would only be convinced by, like, a future version of myself or someone else, like, I really cared about, but, like, could not be convinced by, like, a future stranger.
I could, I think, depending on how bored and or manic I was at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Like, if I'm trapped in an airport bar with this person for, like, multiple hours on a layover, like, there's a chance that I could be, like, get into it and then accidentally convince myself.
Wow.
I don't know. Okay. Just hungry for adventure, you know?
Listen, I'm open to that. But also, like, in the spirit of deja vu and in the spirit of time travel, we are not talking about either one of those things tonight.
We're not.
No, tonight, this morning, good day, good evening, whenever you're listening to this fucking show. We're not, at least that I know of, but Jamie, challenge given to you if you can draw some sort of weird comparison to what we just talked about today. Oh, I'll work it
in. I don't even think it's that difficult. Yeah.
Okay.
So what are we talking about without further ado?
Without further ado, today, good morning, good evening, whenever, we are talking about optimism. Mm. And in that lane, you know, we'll have to talk about pessimism a little bit, but I think, like, the general word that I'm using in this is optimism. Mm-hmm. And pessimism is just gonna, I don't know, show up in the description as more of an antagonistic
quality. Sure, dichotomy. Or
a foil to the optimism, if you will.
You know what, I will.
Thank you. But so I just wanted to, like, open this up from the jump and say, like, do you, Jamie Ryan, identify as either an optimist or a pessimist? Like, would you say you're, like, a glass half full, glass half empty kind of gal?
I think that I am most of the time an optimist, and I think it actually can be kind of, like, to my detriment. Like, I think that...
Oh, wow, okay.
At the beginning of, like, an idea or a project or something, I can definitely overassess my own skills at doing something and then maybe underestimate how long something will take. I don't know. We just did the Enneagram, so I'm going to go ahead and reference it. But, like, as a 7, okay, I am, like, a master reframer. And so anytime something isn't going exactly how I want, like, it is my instinct to, like, flip it and figure out how actually is this good. So, like, where is there a new advantage in this situation that I didn't really want? Like, if my work schedule gets changed or something in a way that I don't like, I often choose to see it as, like, an opportunity to rework the rest of my schedule to maybe be better instead of, like, focusing on that maybe I really hate my new schedule. So I don't know. Being optimistic about things like that, I think, has maybe kept me from changing my circumstance fully sometimes because I don't want to see things as negative.
Okay.
But then I definitely hit a point where, like, it fully flips and, like, nothing is okay and nothing will work and I will never be able to file for health insurance. Like, it's just...
Right. Reoccurring thing. Yeah. No one has health insurance. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm an optimist until I feel, like, pushed off a cliff and then, like, no one can save me.
And then it snowballs, if you will.
Yeah. All of the... And then I'm, like, taking stock of all the things I was overly optimistic about and I'm like, I was a fool. And, yeah. It's hard.
Okay, cool.
I don't know. Are you?
Like, you're like, help anyone? I feel like I would say I'm, like, maybe always striving to be more of an optimist, and that feels like a 2020 vibe for me a little bit.
Oh, that's
perhaps
good. All right. Intentions and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't. And I think it's interesting, like, what you described as being optimistic, and I think we'll touch on some of those things because psychologists attribute it to kind of different things. Like, not everybody's in full alignment. Mm-hmm. And there are times that people would argue optimism is really positive, and there are times that people would actually argue it could be a little detrimental to you. Same thing with pessimism. And so it's interesting, and I think... yeah, I would say probably I wouldn't say I'm a pessimist. So, like, that doesn't feel correct.
Yeah, I don't think so at all.
No, but I think sometimes I can think negative things are, like, a bigger deal than they are, or just, like, oh, well, this is how it is now, in a way that's, like globalizing something bad as, like, well, this is just the way that it is, and this is how people are when, like, someone's a dick.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That I'll just be like, well, yeah, people just suck, and that's, like, how people are as the whole species. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I would argue that's a little pessimistic, but I don't think I always live there. I think I can oftentimes really just be, like, a temporary pessimist. Like, mm-hmm. be, like, really grandly emotional about something in a really pessimistic way, and then, like, move on from it and be like, wow, that was a pretty emotional reaction, Austin, and then, like, swing to a more optimistic perspective.
Sure. So, yeah
don't know. We'll get into it. But I think just like in a very, I don't know, clinical kind of way, like as kids, I think a lot of us are taught to think positively. It's that like parents and teachers, you know, tell you to like look on the bright side or like keep
our a positive generation attitude. At least, yeah,
for sure. Our generation,
you too,
yeah,
can be the president of the United States.
Post. Anything's possible.
Yep.
Right. And then like a lot of self-help books, I think, really instruct that optimism is like the secret to a happy and successful
manifesting
life.
Everything. Yes,
totally. But I would also argue, like, on the flip, that, like, the same well-meaning parents and teachers, and I don't know, probably less the self-helpers, but also offer us, like, the advice of, that's truly, like, the opposite, like, kind of a more pessimistic advice of, like, don't get your hopes up, like, or you'll jinx it, or, like, don't, you know, count your chickens before they hatch, like, you know, even that kind of mm-hmm. whole, like, Murphy's Law vibe that people were like, well, bad things can happen, you should plan for them, like, you know, bring an umbrella, because it might rain, kind of. Mm-hmm. Mentality about a lot of shit, of being prepared for things to go awry. Like, that's not taught, you know?
No. I mean, the Boy Scouts, always be prepared.
Oh, truly. All truly.
I find myself, I think, maybe over-preparing because I worry a lot that, like, something weird or bad is going to happen. And I don't think that has really to do with being, like, a really pessimistic person. I think it is that, like, sometimes I experience, like, a little heightened paranoia. And then I can be like, well, like, when I drive to work, like, I will hit traffic that will cause me to be an hour and a half late. Or, like, I'll somehow run over glass and, like, get a flat tire. So, like, I have a plan for that. Or, like, how I have a plan for being homeless. Like,
Right.
But I don't feel like I'm being pessimistic about things. It's just like I just worry.
I mean, what's an interesting thing, Winston Churchill, who's like one of my fave homies, once said that a pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity and an optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. And a quotable phrase, but I was like, oh, that is interesting. That's an interesting way to frame it. And a bunch of people are going to frame it different ways. And I'm going to tell you about them. And before I get too hard into it, I just want to make the distinction that I and like us in this episode are going to be talking more about psychological optimism rather than philosophical optimism.
Mm.
And let me make a quick distinction there.
Yes,
that
please.
Philosophical optimism is basically like, I don't know, kind of the holding of the belief that the universe exists because it's better than the alternatives.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's a philosophical optimism.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Whereas, like, a psychological optimism, it's more about, like, willingness to accept failure while remaining confident that, like, success can follow and, like, a positive attitude, which a lot of folks in psychology will contrast with, like, negative perfectionism, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to make that distinction.
Yeah.
That we're talking more about psychology, which is usually what we're talking about, rather than the philosophical vibes on this one. So let's talk about it. Like, what is optimism?
What
right?
do they say? Yes, tell me.
Well, going first and foremost to our favorite source, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. Welcome. We should really
optimism?
Give to them. Actually, you guys can give to them on our behalf. I would love that. Thank you. Keep Wikipedia
I've given money
alive.
To Have you never given money to Wikipedia?
I tried a couple of times and then I had an issue. Anyway, I should just try harder.
You should try hard. I mean, if anything, like, wow, I just really believe in Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's a great
source.
I
mean, I believe in a lot of charities, but I always throw, like, $5 to Wikipedia annually. Like, Wikipedia provides.
It does. It really does. All right. So what are they telling us about?
It's important to me.
These
optimisms. And we use it for the show every single time.
Every time, yes.
So optimism is a mental attitude reflecting a belief or hope that the outcome of some specific endeavor or outcomes in general will be positive, favorable, and desirable.
Mm.
A common idiom used to illustrate optimism versus pessimism is a glass half filled with water to the halfway point. You know, the optimist sees it as half full, pessimist sees it as half empty. That's so rudimentary. And I'm like, who doesn't think the glass is half full? Who thinks it's half empty? Probably some people. But
I feel like an entitled motherfucker sees it as half empty.
I'm like, it's water. Calm down.
You can get more.
You can. And perhaps you might need a filtration system, but that is another episode.
That is. Yeah, I'm over here.
So the term optimism derives from the Latin of optimum, meaning best. So being optimistic in a typical sense of the word is defined as expecting the best possible outcome from any given situation.
Mm.
And that's usually referred to in psychology as dispositional optimism.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It thus reflects a belief that future conditions will work out for the best. And for this reason, it is seen as a trait that fosters resilience in the face of stress.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's chill. And you gave kind of a good example of, I think, dispositional optimism when you talked about being like, my work schedule got changed, but now I can like look at like the good things about this rather than choosing to be pissed because I liked the schedule the way it was before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Always
that's
trying
a dispositional
to spin.
Thing.
Spin it. Yep.
Yeah. And then it would help you because it could be stressful if your schedule changes and
it
would help you be more resilient in that whole thing.
It is maybe helping
me. I fucking hate it when my schedule changes. I'll cut a bitch.
I
like,
know.
No.
Just trying to be Optimus Prime, you know, go on.
And doing it. You gotta do what you gotta do. But theories of optimism include dispositional models and models of like an explanatory style.
Mm.
So methods to measure optimism have been developed within both theoretical systems, such as various forms of the life orientation test, which we will talk about.
I've never heard of that.
Oh, get ready. For the original definition of optimism, or the attributional style questionnaire, which is designed to test optimism in terms of like an explanatory style.
Mm.
So variation in optimism and pessimism is somewhat heritable and it reflects biological trait systems to some degree, according to some folks, which I think is always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We're always interested in nature versus nurture here at Why Are You Like This? So there you go. It's also influenced by environmental factors, your family, the environment, and, you know, some sort of just like suggesting you can gather through learning and just being alive. All of good stuff.
Just absorbing
optimism,
little sponges.
Just a little sponge. And optimism by a lot of folks is often linked to health in conversation about how it affects people, which we'll touch on.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yep.
Totally. So psychological optimism, rudimentarily, I want to say that optimism, you know, it's an attitude. It can positively affect a person's mental and physical health. We'll talk more about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And optimism can reduce somebody's stress, increase longevity. So
yeah, if you think the future's
of
going to be good, like, I'll calm down.
Sure. We can talk about how that can be bad for your health, too. Don't worry.
That's fair. Ooh, yep.
So to a lot of psychologists, optimism reflects the belief that outcomes are events and experiences are generally positive, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
Others contend that optimism is more of an explanatory style, like we said. And what that means is that it resides in the way people explain causes of events.
Mm.
Which is different than having a disposition about something that's happened, right?
Right, yeah.
So optimists are likely to see the causes of failure or negative experiences as temporary rather than permanent, specific rather than global, and external rather than internal. And this kind of goes to my,
I
feel like I can be a temporary pessimist because I'll be like, this is fucking, everyone's like this, like everyone is a piece of shit. Like, I feel like I can get that way about romance sometimes. I think I can get that way when I feel slighted by a friend and I can think of other times that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can like take one shitty comment and be like, well, this person's always like this. And I look, make it more global and, you know, more, you know, I don't know, internal rather than external and permanent rather than temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that they said.
Mm-hmm.
So those kind of perspectives enable optimists to more easily see the possibility for change. So, like, if something shitty happens, it's, you know, temporary. It's not going to be for forever.
And it's an opportunity to learn. Like, something negative happening doesn't have to be seen as, like you said, like, permanent or universal. Like, it can just be one circumstance that then you say, this is actually a really great opportunity to say, like, let's do this differently next time. I don't know.
Right.
Sometimes I'm almost glad that like bullshit happens for that reason.
Well, and that's almost, but I think what you're saying is even more like dispositional, like after the fact, because you're being like, well, like it's good that this happened because like we could learn something from it. Now you're reframing the narrative.
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
And so some optimists like consistently ascribe benevolent motives to others and interpret situations in the best possible light.
Mm-hmm.
Others simply disassociate their internal mood from external circumstances, no matter how sticky, which I'm like, must be nice. truly.
Yeah.
But being optimistic is not necessarily always the best strategy. We'll talk about it. And research shows that tempering a sunny disposition with a small dose of realism or even pessimism might be the best way to build resilience and achieve one's goals.
Hmm.
So.
All right. Heard that. Yeah.
Get into it. But I thought that was like kind of an interesting breakdown. And our friends over at Wikipedia give us like a little bit more in terms of the research. And I do want to talk about that because I think it's interesting. And I also think this was one of those areas of psychological research, which I guess is true about, you know, so much psychological research. But when you get into nitty gritty things like things to me that feel like temperament almost at mm-hmm. times, I'm like, how can we prove it? And like, what is correct? And this feels like there's not a total right answer.
But no, this is so difficult to measure. Yeah.
Anything feels really temperament. Subjective.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a sliding scale, of course, as many temperaments are.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that with speaking of scales and tests, right?
Yeah.
So dispositional optimism, so we've broken these down for you a little bit. Researchers kind of operationalize the term differently depending on their research.
Mm-hmm.
So as with any trait characteristic, there are several ways to evaluate optimism. One that I mentioned, the life orientation test.
Mm.
And that is an 8-item scale that was developed in 1985, so pretty fresh,
mm-hmm.
by Michael Shire and Charles Carver. Thank you, gentlemen. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, guys.
But dispositional optimism and pessimism are typically assessed by asking people whether they expect future outcomes to be beneficial or negative.
Mm-hmm.
The LOT, or LOT, the life orientation test, returns separate optimism and pessimism scores for each individual. And behaviorally, these two scores correlate around numbers that, honestly, I don't really understand how you would rank them. And I'm going to read you some of the statements. But
yeah.
Optimistic scores on the scale predict better outcomes in relationships, oftentimes higher social status, and reduced loss of well-being following adversity. There we go.
Yeah, you're more resilient. Also, people like positive people. I mean, if you're trying to make new friends at the office and you're just like Debbie Downer every day, it's not going to happen for you.
Yeah, I think in most situations, people do not climb a career ladder by having a bad attitude. I really don't think you do.
Most of the time, no. Yeah.
Or if you do, to some extent, eventually you get figured out and then you plateau.
Mm-hmm.
I think when people are jerks, sometimes it gets them some advancement, but like to a point, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, a lot of bullshit people in like corporate middle management, you know?
That's right. That's right. But health-preserving behaviors are associated with optimism, while health-damaging behaviors are associated with pessimism.
Mm-hmm.
Some have argued that optimism is the opposite end of a single dimension with pessimism, with any distinction between them reflecting factors such as social desirability.
Mm.
Confirmatory modeling, however, supports a two-dimensional model, and two dimensions predict different outcomes. Genetic modeling confirms this independence, showing that pessimism and optimism are inherited as independent traits, which I was like, come again? Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
With the typical correlation between them emerging as the result of a general well-being factor and family environmental influences. So the nature part,
right.
The nurture part versus the nature part.
Yeah.
And it suggests that patients with high dispositional optimism appear to have stronger immune systems since it buffers against psychological stressors, which truly, I mean, number one cause of illness, I feel like about a lot of things is stress. Stress
will totally. Kill us all. Absolutely. So. It will. And you get better faster from an illness if you like think that you're going to get better.
100%. So I wanted to read you the questions and kind of the general structure of this life orientation test.
Yes, please. What is my life orientation?
We're about to find out. I am going to read you the statements that they have on here, and I'm going to give you the revised. So I'm giving you 10 of them. And basically how one would do these is you'd rank them 0 through 4. But those being ranked, really, we're doing strongly disagree, neutral, agree, strongly agree.
Okay.
So as you'd be instructed, be as honest as you can throughout.
Of course.
And try not to let your responses to one question influence your response to other questions. There are no right or wrong answers. First statement, in uncertain times, I usually expect the best.
Neutral.
I also said neutral on this one.
Because it really, I'm all over the place in uncertain situations. It depends on like how I'm feeling, I think, like what chemicals are going through my body.
Statement two, it's easy for me to relax.
Strongly disagree.
I said agree on that one.
Yeah, I think it's easier for you to relax than me.
On statement three, if something can go wrong for me, it will.
Maybe neutral or somewhat agree.
I said disagree.
That's good for you.
On four, it says, I'm always optimistic about my future.
Neutral?
I disagree.
Yeah, I just swing back and forth so hard. All right, statement five.
That's real.
Yeah.
Statement five, I enjoy my friends a lot. I said strongly agree.
Strongly agree, yeah.
Great. Six, it's important for me to keep busy. I said agree.
Agree or strongly agree.
Okay. Seven, I hardly ever expect things to go my way.
Disagree.
I also disagree. Eight, I don't get upset too easily.
Maybe neutral or disagree.
Yeah, that's where I flirted with and I ended up saying neutral.
But then sometimes like I don't get upset about things that like other people are like, why are you not very upset about that? So it like really, really depends.
Totally. Nine is I rarely count on good things happening to me.
Yeah, I'm not fucking counting on it. Agree.
I said disagree. And then number 10, overall, I expect more good things to happen to me than bad.
Agree. Because like life, is, even if it goes absolutely not the way that I plan or not what I think I want, the chances that my life will be like horrible, I feel like are pretty low. And there are like a lot of things that I have to enjoy. So I feel like, yeah, agree.
All right. I also agree with that one.
Good.
Now I get to tell you some fun stuff about this.
Okay.
So statements 2, 5, 6, and 8. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read them to you. It's easy for me to relax. I enjoy my friends a lot. It's important for me to keep busy. And I don't get upset too easily are totally filler items and have nothing to do with the answers.
Oh, hey, I really like that.
I do too.
Oh my God.
So we got 10 statements. There used to be 12 and they didn't remove the fillers. They just ended up pulling out a couple other ones that they thought were like more explanatory than dispositional, which is why they revised it.
Okay, yeah.
So, items 1, which is in uncertain times, I usually expect the best. That's like an optimism item, but we also have some of these pessimistic, if you will, items. So, 3 is one, like, if something can go wrong for me, it will.
Oh,
I hardly ever expect things to go my way, and I rarely count on good things happening to me. But items like I'm always optimistic about my future, as well as overall I expect more good things to happen to me than bad. And then again, usually expecting the best. Those are all more like optimism items. And so the way you would do this if you were scoring for it is that you use like a numeric system. So strongly disagree is a 0, strongly agree is a 4, and the rest you fill in from there. And if it's a pessimistic statement, you reverse score for it.
Right.
So if it's a pessimistic statement that you say, I strongly agree with the 4, you would give yourself like a 0 when you tallied your score. But if it were an optimistic statement and you said strongly agree, the 4 would be a 4.
Yeah.
Which I think is like a pretty interesting straight up scale. And I liked that there were filler questions.
I love it that there's fillers. Yeah.
And I like that you score some of them in reversed ways, because I think sometimes when we take little things like this, we end up starting to like try and count or like, you know what I mean? Like tally
you figure
our score.
Out how to take a test. Yeah.
Yeah. And this one, not really written that way.
No, you have to kind of take it honestly. That's nice.
Yeah. So knowing like what's the filler and what's like optimistic and pessimistic, I mean, did you feel like you feel pessimistic or more optimistic kind of thinking about these?
Based on those questions, I feel almost like I have to revise my answer about like really being an optimist, because I am like often very paranoid about things going wrong, but I don't I don't know. I do sometimes fall in the trap of like, this is forever and this is universal. But I don't know. Were we the same amount of optimistic roughly based on that test?
You know what? I totally just didn't do the math on that.
I didn't either, but our answers were really similar.
Some of them were similar. And then I feel like some of the ones we disagreed on were like fillers.
Yeah.
Like you were like, it's really hard for me to relax. And I was like, it's easier. And I was like, I knew. I was like, this question doesn't matter.
I thought that one was going to matter so much because I was like, damn, yeah. Like I can't relax. I'm always tense. It's probably making me see things negatively.
Right. And like, that's like, no, that doesn't really have anything to do with optimism.
Yeah. Well,
whatever. Might have something to do with your stress levels, but not optimism. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of the thing to think about it. It is this like expectation of the future. And I feel like overall, perhaps, I think, at least for me, the expectation that last one we did about more good things happening to me than bad, you and I are both like, yeah, I totally agree with that. Because we're like, even if things are like trash and like, we're human, so like bad shit has happened, but also good shit has happened. And I really do feel like, you know, at least the way I view my own life and I don't know, things in general, the within like my own existence, I'm like, yeah, I feel like things are more good than bad. I can get a little, I don't know, doom and gloom when I get like more macro about it because I worry about, you know, the environment.
Yeah, on a global scale, I do not feel optimistic.
Yeah, there are things that I'm like, well, I don't know how this is going to go, but
as far as more good things than bad, I think about that question like, okay, if I think about my whole day, there are so many things that are either neutral or are like somewhat positive that I've like structured into my life. Like every day I wake up, I have coffee and I eat breakfast, and like that is a positive experience. So like that's a good thing that happened to me. And like listening to music on the way to work, like all of those things are good things. And so I feel like, of course, it's going to be more than the bad because I'm not going to suddenly start living some way that I hate.
I like that. That's legit. And I feel like, I want to talk a little bit more about that. But before we do, since we just talked a bunch about the dispositional optimism, and that's really what that quiz test, whatever you want to call it, does. I just want to shed a little bit more light on the explanatory style. So again, explanatory style is distinctly different from the dispositional theories of optimism. And while related to life orientation measures of optimism, attributional style theory suggests that dispositional optimism and pessimism are reflections of the way people explain events.
Okay.
That attributions caused these dispositions. So here, an optimist would view defeat as temporary, does not apply to other cases, is not considered his or her fault. And measures of attributional style distinguish three dimensions among explanations for events. So those being whether these explanations draw on internal versus external causes, whether the causes are viewed as stable versus unstable, and whether explanations apply globally versus being situationally specific.
Okay.
In addition, the measures distinguish attributes for positive and for negative events. So I think the one that really struck me about, you know, kind of the explanatory stuff about optimism is just that I think when I'm emotional about something, I can get really global, but I usually come down from that.
It's emotional for me, too. And that's what I keep trying to separate, because it's hard for me to say, like, I'm this or I'm that, because I absolutely get in these like crazy emotional spirals where I'm fully irrational and everything that's happening to me is becoming universal and my current situation is permanent. And that's not my overall disposition, but it happens.
Sure. And these folks who are kind of arguing this side of psychology are going to say that an optimistic person attributes internal, stable, and global explanations to good things. And a pessimistic explanations attribute these traits to stability, global things, internality, to like negative events such as like difficulty in relationships. And so for me, that's when I was like, well, if this person wronged me, everyone's like an asshole.
Right.
That would be like a pessimistic thing because I'm taking something that's negative and saying it's really global. But if you ask me, like, if I think people are inherently good, which what a hot topic, I would say like generally, yeah, I think
Oh, really?
Most people are. Yeah, I do.
That's nice. I think things
happen that change us to like be shitheads, and like everybody's an asshole from time to time. But I think like, you know, removing like the sociopaths and stuff from things, sure, and like true psychological disorders, mm-hmm, I think that like most people want to do good. It's like oftentimes exist within like constraints that make us do bad shit, including things like capitalism.
So. Yeah, I think if when we all have like enough resources and like we're getting our needs met, I do think that people do want to be good because it feels good to do good things for other people. And then you get like reciprocal love. And yeah, for that reason, I think you're right. People do strive to be good.
Yeah, and so I would say, like, globally, I think, like, people are good. But then I'd also, at times, like, in heated emotions, I'd be like, globally, people are trash.
Yeah, so, but also they kind of are. Yeah.
Listen, ain't nobody perfect.
The systems we create that bind us are trash.
Facts. So models of optimistic and pessimistic attributions show that attributions themselves are a cognitive style. So individuals who tend to focus on the global explanations do so for all types of events.
Whoa.
And these styles correlate among each other, which I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition to that, individuals vary how optimistic their attributions are for good events and how pessimistic their attributions are for bad events. Mm. But these two traits of optimism and pessimism are uncorrelated.
Interesting.
So that you could think like stuff is real, like you would look at something with like a really pessimistic kind of explanatory thing for like a bad event.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also look at a good event and have like a really optimistic explanation for it globally.
Right.
Because you're just maybe trying to describe everything globally.
Totally, totally. Everything becomes macro. I absolutely know people like that.
Totally. I think again, to their point, it has to do with just how people are like cognitively and the mm-hmm. different styles there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of debate about the relationship between explanatory style and optimism. And some researchers argue that optimism is simply just a lay term for what researchers know as an explanatory style.
Mm.
But more commonly, it's found that explanatory style is quite distinct from dispositional optimism, which I'm like, yeah, I see the differences.
Yeah.
And folks say that the two should not be used interchangeably as they are marginally correlated at best, which I was like, well, that is interesting. I would think they're different things and mm-hmm. maybe we just have both.
Well, I would say that I feel almost like I could have maybe a pessimistic disposition pretty frequently, but that my explanatory style is optimistic, because a lot of times when something happens to me, I will be like, fuck, God, like this shit's always happening. And like, this is going to like cause a whole sequence of events. It's going to ruin the rest of my day and be really upset about it. Maybe beat myself up because I feel like I have done something to cause this happening. Like when I fucked up the bottom of my car because I hit a pothole really hard, absolutely was ruining my whole day. But then when I would tell other people about it, I have this thing where I feel uncomfortable expressing, I think, like negative feelings. And so I always like spin things when I tell them to other people. And so when that happened to my car, then when I had to like get a fucking Lyft to work at the last second, and it was like the weirdest ride. But then like, when I got to work and people were like, why'd you get dropped off? I told them about it and they're all like, oh, that like that sucks so much. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Like, you know, someone's going to come out tomorrow and it's no big deal. And, you know, I got to talk to someone in the Lyft. And so like that was a nice social experience. But I don't know that I actually felt that way. I just wanted to frame it that way when I told it.
Do you feel like reframing things when you tell them to be more positive changes your own outlook?
I think so. And I think that actually that's probably a way that I constantly manipulate my reality.
Mm.
Like I constantly like make things feel better or okay by like telling maybe a lighter version of a story or a more optimistic version of a story than how I actually had felt in the moment. I think it rewrites it for me a little bit. And then I know, like at work, I know that my coworkers then expect me to not be upset about my car, and it almost creates accountability, and then I don't bitch about my car because they think I'm not upset about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. There's something to that.
Yeah.
I feel like I can think about things that happened to me that I felt like the socially conscious thing for me to do, and just like the version of myself that I wanted to project out there, even if it felt really frustrating, was to like be more optimistic and be like, this mm-hmm. really isn't a big deal. Mm-hmm. Or as my dad says about a lot of things when they happen, he goes, well, if that's your biggest problem, life's pretty good. And I'll say that when something's like really terrible, and I'll be like, but you know what? If this is my biggest problem,
yeah,
life is pretty good. And I remember thinking that, like, so my heat went out a couple years ago and it was like fucking 2 degrees.
Oh my God, I remember that.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
But I also felt like it just got framed in comparison, like really organically, that before I got home and knew my heat was out, I was like coming back from being in Ohio for the holidays, and I drove past a bunch of people and I was like, man, we got some like crazy low temps right now. And I drove past a bunch of people who were sleeping under a bridge. So then when I found out my heat was out, I like, my life didn't feel so shitty.
Right.
And I thought like, well, that's my biggest problem though. Like, my life's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think sometimes, like, I don't know, comparison sometimes feels like the thief of joy, but if you...
Also the thief of pessimism, the thief of angst.
It could be, for me in that moment, thief of angst, it was. Yeah. Yeah, but it's interesting. I like what you're saying, because I want to kind of talk about what made me want to talk about optimism in general.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to another podcast where Sam Harris was talking, and he's really talking about meditation, and that's something that he's a big guru on and like knows a bunch of shit. Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow in this, I guess I really got thinking about like more my like temperament outlook rather than like meditating itself.
Yeah.
And so I get, because he was kind of discussing living an examined life. Mm-hmm. And it made me think about like, wow, like a lot of times when I'm like super introspective, or like beating myself up about something I said 2 weeks ago, which I'm certainly sure. doing right now.
Yeah.
That I like feel shittier.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having this internal dialogue, and everybody is. We're all having a conversation with ourselves constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like an I talking to a me. And if we did it out loud, we would sound kind of crazy, which I do it out loud. Tune into literally episode 1 of season 1 of this podcast if you want to hear about my extreme qualms about talking out loud to myself all the time. But it felt full circle, so mm-hmm. I mention it.
Mm-hmm. Got to.
But we're so like overstimulated all the time, and this is where the kind of meditation bits came into play when I was thinking about this, that are we even able to realize like the thoughts that pass through our brain that affect us?
Because
not like,
usually.
We're constantly having thoughts, and you know, we're constantly thinking something about like whatever shit we just saw on Instagram, or that, you know, they lost our shirt at the dry cleaners, or that, you know, the waiter messed up our order, or like whatever it is, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of takes me, I guess, in one thing that people can kind of be trying to combat in meditation is those feelings of all be happy when.
Yeah, right. Figuring out how to be present, like in right now, not thinking about future or past.
Yeah, and I really was like, wow, I feel like oftentimes worrying about the future makes me feel more like a pessimist.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And like, it can be things about like how will I ever have enough money to retire, to like being globally pessimistic about dating, that I'm like, all men are trash, which sure. is, you know, whatever. And then like, I make that really macro. And then I'm worried about whatever either one of those things means for the future. Cause then mm-hmm. I'm like, well, I'm going to be alone for forever. Or like, I'm going to not be able to ever stop working because I won't be able to afford to.
Mm-hmm.
And those make me really pessimistic about what is like gonna be. Like, I feel like I can be negative because it just feels like things that like I can try and control and like can control to some extent, but also can't totally control.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm like, if I let go about being really worried about the future, your example of worrying about or having the plan for when you're homeless, to that
yeah
like,
right
point of being like, that's, are you like, is that pessimistic? But if I feel like I let go of that, and like I put like the worrying aside and I can like be in the present, I feel mm-hmm. like I'm way more grateful and optimistic.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
And I don't know, I was like thinking in like silly ways about like things that I do that I feel like just like really present when you're just like not worried about anything else. And I think like sometimes when I have like permission to, because I'm not trying to get anywhere and I've been somewhere and it's like I've been out or I've been at a friend's and then it's pouring rain and I've mm-hmm. got to come home. Mm-hmm. And then like the times that I'd be like, I don't have an umbrella, but like, fuck it. I'm like walking from like the train or wherever in my neighborhood, just getting drenched.
You're right.
And like, I can think of times that I find that like really gratifying because there's something like pleasant about being that free.
Right.
But it's like, I don't have any future concerns about being drenched because I'm like not trying to get anywhere. And I do just feel like in a, like a more optimistic, jovial, grateful mood.
Right. No, I do too. And there is something, yeah, about walking in the rain, if it's not freezing, that totally makes you feel like in your body in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it a makes little you brain feel very cleanse. Present. Yes.
Yeah. And there's also something really great about being in the moment where you've just like taken a bunch of edibles with your friends and
Absolutely.
You're just like laughing so hard about dumb things and like also divine.
Yeah, you don't even know what day it is, that in the moment.
Yeah. But I think, like, oftentimes, like, I don't know, the I'll be happy when kind of thing that, like, I feel like can fuck with my optimism, at least, mm-hmm. is that you're, like, deferring your future to some, like, or you're deferring your happiness to, like, some future point.
Oh, yeah. I've really struggled with that, like, especially over the last few years. And I'm trying to just meditate and like mentally get ahead of that. But I have found that like I can't meditate unless I'm like being optimistic. So like I really struggled to meditate at first because my attitude about it was like, this is kind of dumb. I feel like this isn't going to help me. And that attitude will absolutely mean that meditation will not work for you.
right.
So I had to like know that it would work and that I could like clear my mind and settle down. Yeah, almost just have to like convince yourself. So it's fully about your disposition or your explanation.
Totally.
Both, I guess.
Or both, I guess. Yeah.
And that I mean, feels I like a circle for me, the disposition and explanation thing. I feel like it's...
I feel like they fuel each other a little
bit. Yeah, it's kind of a loop where you it feeds back on itself. And the way that I explain affects my disposition.
100%. And I think that's one of the things I liked about thinking about... I don't know, like, this to me felt like a lot of reframing if you think about, like, the, mm-hmm. I guess, what was triggered when I was listening to stuff about meditation. Because of the, you know, deferring your happiness to some future point, it's also, like, anything that you've ever done where you're like, well, I'll be happy when X, Y, and Z. And then mm-hmm. you, like, get there, and it's, like, never enough. Like, you're not
No, you
happy.
Always just, are like, thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're always thinking that, like, you never
arrive. Live.
Yeah.
I sometimes...
Well, you can't ever arrive because... You can't ever leave your attention on a on a present moment if you're
right.
pushing to whatever that thing in the future is that you have to have or accomplish or do or whatever it is.
And then you can't appreciate or enjoy what's happening right now. And sometimes I try to think about, like, what if I could revisit, like, my 18-year-old brain? Or, like, what if I could tell my 18-year-old self what my life is like right now? And if I think about that, I'm like, oh, I think she would be pretty excited about a lot of this, not everything,
Real.
But like a lot of
a
this
lot.
Is stuff that I would have really and did really want and think would be fun. And like that you and I are still friends and that we like do this show. And I don't know,
yeah.
so many things in my life about like my adult life, I don't appreciate because I'm always thinking of them through the lens of, well, later this and this will be better, easier, more advanced, mm-hmm. whatever.
And that was kind of one of the things I really liked that Sam Harris said. One of the things he said, you can't become happy. You can only be happy.
Mm.
And I kind of feel like that, like, I want to apply that to, like, optimism in some way. I don't know, because I feel like it's
yeah.
all kind of entrenched. I feel like your happiness is entrenched in your disposition and how you're explaining things.
100%.
That's all linked together. And I was like, wow. I don't know. It all made me feel like I wanted to then maybe be more present
mm-hmm.
and like in being more present, also try and think more positively about the future, but also maybe think less about the future.
Yeah. Yeah. More and less.
And I thought that was, it's an interesting point though, too, because about like future awards and like that kind of thing, like the dopamine dump that we all experience is usually in anticipation of something rather than like the actual reward. Like, when you really want to eat, like, that, like, whatever, like, the cheeseburger is, mm-hmm. it's, like, you don't, like, feel, like, better after the cheeseburger.
No. It's sometimes right before and then during. Yeah, and then after. It's a little crash sometimes.
It's true of, like, food. It's true of, like, drugs, like, certain hard drugs that, like, addicts, like, if you... Like, it's, like, the anticipation a lot of the times. Like, sometimes I think I've heard there are specific drugs. Like, if people are doing, like, I feel like it's, like, heroin and meth and stuff. Sometimes people will, like, have, like, so much dopamine, like, dump. Not when they start using the drug, but just because they scored that they'll, like, throw up in, like, a euphoric way.
Yeah.
Which I'm, like, whoa. I truly cannot imagine.
I can't imagine, but I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, but and also sex, great example that, like, everybody, like, looks forward to, like, the act of sex and, like, sure, like, you want to orgasm, but, like, that's not really, like, the thing you're totally looking forward to. It's, like, the act of it in the moment or, like, the build up to, or, you know what I mean?
Totally. You don't go to a movie just to, like, get to the end and then know, like, what happened and that it was happy. Like, you go to experience it. And, like, with sex, like... so much of it is anticipation. I feel like, I don't know, like a sexual encounter could be like literally a whole evening where you're like at dinner and out, and like anticipation could be happening like hours earlier.
That's sometimes the best part, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And then everything's just gotta come together at the end. But just like, that's
gotta
not
come together at the end, yep.
Literally and figuratively, yes. Yes. Yeah, but I don't know. It made me think a lot about that. And I was like, wow, just like the thoughts about optimism and like meditation, like make me want to be more present, which I think is positive. I think being more present is good. I think I am not an expert, but
I think I used to worry that being present would make me not plan correctly for the future. But that's like truly not the case.
Well, let's talk about some of this. I guess give the other edge of this because I thought it was interesting and I always like to give like another edge of things. But so the origins of all this optimism talk with psychologists, the differences in both dispositional optimism and pessimism and in the attributional style, they claim are heritable. So both optimism and pessimism are strongly influenced by environmental factors, including family environment.
Or if all your coworkers are bitching all the time, you'll be negative too. Facts. Watch.
Yeah, listen, that energy, man. It's also been suggested that optimism may be directly inherited as a reflection of underlying heritable traits such as intelligence, temperament, and things like alcoholism. There's evidence from twin studies that show, for instance, that the inherited component of the dispositional optimism is about 25%, making this trait a stable personality dimension. I was like, that seems intense.
Yeah.
And a predictor of life outcomes, which I was like, whoa, also feels intense.
Yes.
So its genetic origin, which interacts with environmental influences and other risks, again, both nature and nurture, also determines the vulnerability to depression across the lifespan, which I also would argue is another thing that's like hereditary, like alcoholism, like depression is in there, a lot of mental health juju. But many theories assume optimism can be learned, which I like.
Yeah.
And research supports a modest role of family environment acting to raise or lower optimism and to lower or raise neuroticism and pessimism. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in this, you can see this not just in like children, what they learn from their parents' environment, but you can kind of see this in pets. Like if you have a very, very nervous person, a lot of times the pet is also very nervous.
Sure.
My immediate family, like there's a lot of anxiety and we have a very, very nervous dog. And so I feel like if you are an animal or a person constantly around people who are worried or thinking that like the end of the world's going to happen, you will obviously think that too.
Totally. I mean, I think that's real. And I bring up kind of the hereditary stuff just because to explain kind of, I think, like, the other edge of the sword, if you will, that I want to bring up just the associations with health and optimism.
Yeah.
Because I think it's worth mentioning and interesting.
Most definitely, yeah.
But optimism and health are correlated moderately, so they say. Optimism has been shown to explain between 5 and 10% of the variation in the likelihood of developing some health conditions, notably including cardiovascular disease, stroke, and depression.
That adds up.
And then the relationship between optimism and health has also been studied with regards to physical symptoms, coping strategies, and negative effects for those suffering from rheumatoid arthritis, asthma, and fibromyalgia. Because why not?
Why not? Also, just like autoimmune diseases, your disposition is really important. My fellow cronies and colitises, keep your spirits high.
Listen, real. And it's been found among individuals with these diseases, optimists are not more likely than pessimists to report pain alleviation due to coping strategies, despite differences in psychological well-being between the group.
Interesting.
Which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
A meta-analysis has confirmed the assumption that optimism is related to psychological well-being. Mm. Simply put, optimists emerge from difficult circumstances with less distress than pessimists, which I'm like, sure, sure.
Yeah, sure. You're more resilient. Yeah.
And furthermore, the correlation appears to be attributed to coping style. So that is, optimists seem intent on facing problems head on, taking active and constructive steps to solve their problems. Pessimists are more likely to abandon their efforts to obtain their goals.
Oh.
So with that said, optimists may respond better to stress, and pessimists may show higher levels of cortisol and trouble regarding like cortisol in response to stressors.
Fuck,
and there
cortisol.
Was another study done by Shire, who's our guy who wrote the life orientation test with a homie.
Yes,
and
clever
in this
test.
Study, he examined the recovery process of a number of patients that had undergone surgery. And the study showed that optimism was a strong predictor of the rate of recovery.
Yes,
and
I have heard that.
Achieved faster results in behavioral milestones such as sitting in bed, walking around, etc. And they were also rated by staff as having a more favorable physical recovery. And then in the study, in a 6-month follow-up later, it was found that optimists were quicker to resume normal activities.
Which it's the same with exercise. That makes it, like, if you think that you can't do it, like, in a spin class or something, versus if you, like, tell yourself that, like, you absolutely can finish and, like, you're not even tired, then you're much more likely to finish.
Right. No, it's real. And I thought, though, one of the things that was interesting, though, on some other health juju I read, that they were like, well, is optimism ever bad? Because here are all these things being like, it's good for you and it makes you feel better. And I like to play the side of every coin. So there were studies about folks with like different health issues. And they threw out kind of like, I think like 20 options to people. And to show, I don't know, just like what they thought their risk for, they're saying like, do I think I have like a high risk of like having a heart attack or a low risk? And so optimistic people are more likely to think they have like a low risk of these things. But also, if you believe your chances of having something like a heart attack are low, you're also probably less likely to eat a healthy diet, maybe more likely to smoke and consume alcohol. So,
oh my God, this is me.
And so it's like kind of... What's kind of this weird that you're like, oh, I don't think this is going to happen to me. So then I'm like going to do all this shit. So it's like an optimistic temperament. But then you're like doing shit that's bad for you because you're like, well, it's probably fine.
Yep. Just reckless. No, I do this. I'm always like, my blood pressure is so low. And then I'm like literally salting my toast. Because it's low and I'm not worried about it. But then like also.
You do like salt.
God, I fucking love it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just thought that was like an interesting double-edged sword that it's like, yeah, 1,000%. You know what? There's something to be said that like, you don't be like so optimistic, you're not precautious.
Yeah, my dad got swindled on a car like that one time. He was like...
Wait, say more.
He just like gets into conversations with people and it's like he forgets that they're a salesman and like want his money. And he's just like, oh, what a good dude. And just like really jives and is having a good time. And suddenly like he's bought an absolute lemon and cannot return it, like cannot resell it. And I'm just like, yeah, you got fully taken just now because you think that people are always trying to give you a deal when they tell you they're trying to give you a deal. He just believes people. And I like that quality. It's nice, but it gets him in trouble sometimes.
That's real. And that's kind of an interesting thing because we've talked a bunch about optimism about like situational things and like health, but we haven't, I guess, delved in aside from me saying like when one person's a jerk, I'm globally like everyone's a jerk.
Sure, yeah.
For a second, okay, mm-hmm. I move on. But, like, what do you think about that in terms of being, like, optimistic about people?
I am not optimistic about people. I feel like I am kind of, like, with strangers at least, I always assume that, like, people have, like, nefarious intentions or, like, someone has, like, a body in their car or, like, I don't know, like, that they're thinking bad things about me or not about me, but, like, I worry about strangers a lot. Like, I would never get taken by a salesman that way because I wouldn't believe that he had my best interests at heart. But when it comes to, like, friends or acquaintances or, like, social dynamics where, like, maybe something happened that, like, maybe I feel a little slighted or maybe I felt like someone at work, like, said something that was, like, a little gruff, like, my first instinct is not in that situation to be like, well, they must not like me or like they are always like grumpy or I don't usually get that upset about that. So I feel like if it's a social situation or if it's a person that I know, I am more likely to give them the benefit of the doubt and I'm more likely to be like, you know, something's going on for them or they didn't mean it or I misinterpreted. But if it's a salesman trying to sell me a fucking old ass sob, I'm going to be like, no, sir, do not speak to me. I don't know. What are you more, do you give people the benefit of the doubt? Like socially or?
I feel like socially, I like maybe give people the benefit of the doubt, like too much in a social thing. I don't know because I've like sold things for money before. I guess I don't discredit people doing that. I'm happy to get upsold though, like at a restaurant because that's I'm like different. Enjoying myself.
Yeah.
But it's not though.
It's a little different. I mean, like this man was like really lying to my father about this car.
Okay, sure. That's different.
If they told you if they're trying to upsell you on like a side of truffle fries and then like what they bring out is like cold, like frozen, formerly frozen French fries, like that is the equivalent of what happened with this car.
Sure, sure, sure. I don't know. I like to be upsold on things sometimes, but not like in a, and it will cross my mind that like someone could be doing whatever because like this is going to result in a better tip. And sometimes I don't care.
No, I don't care. I respect that hustle.
I'm having a good time.
And yes. And if I'm saying yes to upsells, I'm having a great fucking time. So keep it coming. Respect.
Right. Totally. And I don't know. It's just, I guess I would say I'm pretty, like, I'm that person that you would go out with who would, like, end up having, like, a longer than 45 minute conversation with a stranger at the bar. Mm-hmm. Like, and not even, and I don't even mean that in a flirty way. Like, sometimes
no,
just,
no.
like, old people.
Yep.
It's, like, the vibe. I don't know. Excuse me. More mature people.
More mature people, yes.
I did. I pulled a U. I called people old. I don't know. I mean, wouldn't you say I feel like I'm maybe I am more like your dad probably than like you?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think I'm like more wary of strangers socially. Like I think everyone's trying to pull one over on me. However, I've had like some bad experiences where I like trusted people for too long. And so maybe that's part of it.
Who hasn't though? Who hasn't trusted someone for too long?
That's fair. Yeah.
It's just like, do you apply it globally? Ooh, pessimism, optimism comes back around.
That was a boomerang.
I heard it.
Thanks.
Well, I think in true Why Are You Like This fashion, we should wrap up our chats in a verbal game.
A verbal game. So cue the vibraphone.
Cue it. So, I have a question for you regarding a pessimist trope,
mm-hmm.
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is an individual that is like 100% a pessimist.
Ooh.
Like that's just like their outlook on everything. It's
sure,
like
yeah.
pessimism.
It's like literal pessimism. Debbie Downer. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're just applying like negative shit globally. Like that's always the way it's going to be. You know, things are, you know, internal rather than external. It's yeah, it's that kind of vibe.
Intrinsically
then we have
bad.
Somebody who is an optimist. the eternal optimist. Like, everything's going to be fine. They are probably the person who's going to buy the lemon car.
Oh, 100%. You know? Yeah.
They're, like, maybe going to get taken on some shit.
They'll cash in their 401k for an elaborate vacation with family members.
They might, because everything will work out.
Yeah, you know? That'll come back. It's just money. It's paper. It floats in and out.
Truly, truly left in and out. And then our third counterpart, because I saw him as both an eternal optimist in one persona and both an eternal pessimist in another persona. So I'd like to welcome to the program Richard Simmons.
Oh my God. Wow. The complicated man that is Richard Simmons.
I mean, he's truly a complicated guy. And don't you see both optimism and pessimism in him, like, easily?
Oh, 1,000%. His outward persona, his jazzercising, even though that's not what it was called. Slimmons, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, eternal optimist. Mm. Anyone can do anything. You're the best. I'm the best, you know? But then I think underneath, really, obviously, a lot of pain and darkness and pessimism based on that podcast.
Missing Richard Simmons is the one you are referring to.
Highly recommend, yes.
Great podcast if you haven't listened to it. That said, who you marrying, who you fucking, and who you killing?
Okay, so I have to, I think, kill the negative person, the pessimist, because although our life would probably be safer, I think that the constant worry and, like, certainty that the world is a bad place and people have negative intentions and that bad things mostly are going to happen, I think that you can manifest that for yourself. And I think that even though the pessimist might be more prepared for life, like maybe they've safeguarded against things, like taken a lot of precautions, I think that they would actually manifest a lot of bad things just by believing that they would happen. I don't know how that works, but I do feel like that's a thing. And okay, I feel like
some energetic shit. I see you.
Yeah. And I feel like if I were around that all the time, like, my autoimmune disease would get really bad. And I just feel like it would be a miserable existence. Whereas the optimist, like, you might really fuck up, like, your life and your plans by failing to plan and, like, assuming everything would work out. Like, maybe you open a really risky restaurant business and then are, like, in horrible debt. But if you're married to the optimist, that situation, it feels less bad because, like, you have somebody with you who's like, yup, we totally just, like, lost this restaurant. We lost all of our savings. We have no retirement.
But what if you have to declare bankruptcy and the optimist is like, it's no big deal. It's fine.
Exactly.
It'll work out.
I think it would be...
You feel okay with that?
Infuriating. I would not feel okay with it. Not feel okay with it. But I think that just having, like, a fully positive outlook would make things be more okay. Like, positive people like being around them. Maybe we're totally broke. Mm-hmm. Maybe we filed bankruptcy and, like, all these terrible things happen. But we had a good time while we were failing that business. And now people like us because my spouse is optimistic all the time. And so someone's just taking care of us in our old age. We just live with some younger friends and everything's fine. So it all worked out. So I think I'm marrying the ever optimist and, we'll just, like, quietly, sob in the bathroom from time to time and try to manage my personal anxieties.
Oh, wow.
And, cause dark, you know, like, honest. I could not be worried a little.
Oh, of course.
And, kill the other person. Oh God. Then I have to have sex with Richard Simmons.
You do have to have sex with Richard Simmons.
Well, I'll let you know how it is.
Okay. Okay, girl.
What do you do? What would you do? What would you do if your son was at home? You remember that song?
Yes, I do remember that song. I mean, I think I too, would marry the optimist, although I would, like, steer away from, we would not be in business together. We would not be entrepreneurs. I think I would have, like, a lot of stress because I would feel like I would really have to carry, like, a lot of financial weight, but, like, maybe I'd have fun doing it if they weren't, you know, a pessimist. I think I would sleep with the pessimist once just because I don't
God,
really,
the
I,
worst fuck in the world.
Would it be, though?
I don't know. Maybe they would think it was really bad the whole time. They would, like, walk into the sexual
encounter.
Would they
think it was actively bad, or would they be, like, worried it was going to be bad?
I feel like they would be worried it was going to be bad, but then, like, confirmation bias, like, notice all the things that maybe they don't like, or, like, that maybe aren't going well, and focus on that.
I think I'd still rather have sex with them than Richard Simmons, personally. No shade to Richard, but I just... It's not calling to me in the night, you know?
I don't feel called to, no.
I don't know. Like, consensual, keyword, sex. We've all had, you know, it's like pizza. Like, even when it's not great, it's like, okay, you know?
Sure, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of, like, I could kind of see there being, like, a silver lining to the pessimist, like, really thinking things were going to be terrible and then, like, them not being terrible.
Okay, yeah. I guess they could be surprised and, like, turned around. But I guess my kind of assumption was that they would be disappointed by almost anything.
I mean, I don't know. I might just have, like, angry sex with them. Like, we can't
Or that,
know.
Yeah.
Here's the follow-up question to that, though. Mm-hmm. Is there a role in your life that you would want someone who is an eternal pessimist to play?
Ooh.
Is there any scenario in which you'd be like, yes, please?
Oh, wow. What would...
I can think of one.
I'm just like, who, like, in what area do I need to be, like, kept in line is what where my head goes. What? Where do you want that person?
I would want them to be my financial advisor.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I was thinking. I was like, well, if I, like, really wanted to, like, have an intense personal trainer, I guess I could do that and have, like, exclusively negative reinforcement.
Oh, wow. That would be hard.
Once at a job that I ended up quitting because I hated and cried all the time, in the interview, I got nervous, and they asked me how I learn the best, and I, without really thinking, said negative reinforcement.
No. And so, what?
Yeah, that's when I worked at Houston's. In my interview, they were like, how do you learn? I was like, negative reinforcement. And that is not how I learned.
Why would that even... Why would,
I mean, it was true.
Like, you just, like, asked for them to make your job terrible, but, like, why would that even come to mind?
I think my thinking was, like, when I'm really afraid, I, like, make sure that I'm doing everything correctly. But, like, it makes it... really hard to learn when you're that scared, and, like, also it's hell, so I shouldn't have said that.
Oh my god, that's crazy.
So where do I actually want that person? I guess, yeah, finance, maybe. I don't know. I wouldn't always want to be worried about it. They could be worried for me, I guess.
I could see the, like, personal trainer being a pessimist being helpful, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe or maybe not, if they're like, you'll never... Well,
yeah,
actually,
that could be terrible.
Wait, but then you might want to prove them wrong if they're like, you'll never be able to run up this hill.
Well, I think a financial advisor might make me feel the same way, that they're like, well, you'll never retire. You're broke. Like, you know,
and then
I mean?
You're like, surpassing their expectations, which feels amazing.
Where do I want to be negatively reinforced so I can be like, sucks to suck, motherfucker?
Yeah.
Maybe just, like, I don't know. In situations in which maybe I could surprise people. I don't know, right?
Yeah, finance and maybe personal training.
Perhaps. Well, if you'd like to tell us this week where you seek an eternal pessimist to run some aspect of your life, we would like to hear about it.
We sure would.
And yeah, absolutely. And you can do that, as always, on the internet. You can find us via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. And I don't know. Stay present. Meditate if that's your thing, but, like, also you don't have to. And
flip and reverse your reality. Think of it as better. I don't know. Maybe that's bad.
Get caught in the rain.
You know what? That's the answer.
I don't know.
Get caught in a steamy summer rain. None of this good January bullshit, but in the summer, try to get out in the rain.
Yeah. None of this front end of the year stuff. It's not cute.
Did you already say where to get at us on the internet?
Yep.
Okay. Great. Well,
bye.
Bye.